Hello and welcome to Undivided. I'm Brandi Cruz. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Happy Friday to all of you. Coming up today, President Biden claims that there are people in this country who want to go back to the days where they hung black people from trees and gathered round taking pictures and celebrating. I'll play the clip for you, and we'll talk about the dangerous rhetoric that he's using to divide us, to convince us that we are still divided on the basis of race, when he promised on the campaign trail to do just the opposite. Also, should TikTok and certain other social media sites be banned in schools and in government buildings? On Florida Report, Miranda's going to talk about a renewed effort underway in that state to do just that. But first, I want to share with you about the morning I had, which was amazing. So I got this invitation to go to breakfast with Dr. Jordan Peterson, who, of course, is connected to the Daily Wire, who I guess rose to fame when he started speaking out very publicly and forcefully against some of what was happening with the gender identity issues. He's a Canadian psychologist. And if you've watched his videos, if you've listened to his podcast, I mean, the man is at just a different level of intelligence. And so it was really interesting to get an opportunity to sit in a room with him and to hear from him. And there's a small group of us, 10, 15 people. And Jordan Peterson has been touring the country giving lectures, and he's got a couple stops. He was in Seattle last night. I think he's in Everett this weekend. And so it's just this really awesome opportunity. And there were a lot of things about what, you know, this journey that I've embarked on that, you know, there are things that Dr. Jordan Peterson have said that have helped me along the way and helped reinforce or prop me up when I felt like pushback was too much, the consequences of telling the truth were too much. For instance, you know, we talked about the other day when I ended up canceling a keynote speech of mine that was going to be put on by the Kent Chamber of Commerce because of some really unreasonable pushback I got over political beliefs that I don't even hold. And someone sent me this segment that Jordan Peterson did, I think, on the Joe Rogan podcast, where he said, you know, it's incumbent on all of us to set up our lives in such a way that we can afford to tell the truth.
When enough people are silent about things they know they have something to say about, then you have a tyranny. And so, well, we haven't sorted through all this, you know, very well in our society, but I think it's morally incumbent on all of us to set up our lives so that we can afford to tell the truth. Mm. And if you can't, well, then you think, no, you haven't got the hatches battened down, right? The walls of your towers, your fort aren't high enough. You're not properly armed. And you should be, because, you know, the mob's coming for you. And so is the chaos of nature. And you bloody well better be prepared.
And that's what I've been trying to do for the past year and a half, you know, stepping away from corporate media, trying to build this podcast up to be something where I can't afford to tell the truth, where I can't be canceled by a boss or by a corporation for what I might say. And it gives you, it opens you up to this whole new outlook and perspective on life. And so I'm just really, I think, grateful. You know, do I agree with him on everything? Probably not. You know, I don't know every single minor detail of his political beliefs, but I agree with a lot of what he says on, you know, about sort of the woke left and where it's taken discourse, the unreasonable nature of some of the beliefs around transgender issues and transgender reassignment surgery for kids. So anyway, it was an interesting conversation, and we were, you know, the theme of the kind of breakfast chat we were having was about courage. And I wanted to share with you just a couple of, you know, the interesting takeaways I got from that conversation. And maybe it'll inform actually the next segment that we're going to discuss, which is something that Matt Walsh said, the commentator that he's getting a lot of heat for. But, you know, actually one of the most interesting things that was said to me was actually before breakfast. I don't want to drop the name of the person who invited me because I don't know if he wants attention, but let's just say he's a business owner in Seattle. And he was talking to me about, you know, who we allow kind of in our circle and who, you know, different opinions that we're willing to allow kind of in our life. And he had an analogy that he took from the Bible to explain it. But basically it's that you can have people who, you know, you don't agree with, but you just tolerate. And that's just a fact of life, right? There's this segment of people who have political beliefs that you don't agree with, but you just tolerate it. And then there are, of course, people who you agree with. And then there are going to be and should be people whose views or, you know, whatever it is, are so contrary to everything you believe that you can't just tolerate them. You have to actively push back against them. And his analogy was, you know, you yank the weeds out of your crops. And that's something that really got me thinking about, you know, we've lost the ability to tolerate views that aren't similar to ours. You know, if people, for instance, don't like what I talk about on the podcast, or they don't like a position that I take, they are free to not listen to the podcast, to not get on my social media, et cetera. And it's just part of tolerating the fact that there are a variety of beliefs out there in the world. And if you obsess over every single person who disagrees with you, what a sad, lonely, horrible life that would be. Now, on the contrary, if there are people who vehemently disagree from their heart and soul, morally find something I say repugnant, then by all means, you know, they have every right to fight against certain views or people that they just will not simply tolerate, that they feel like they need to push back against. But I think that we need to get to a place as society where we're willing to tolerate. It doesn't mean we have to invite people into our circle who we don't agree with. It doesn't mean we have to be friends with them. It doesn't mean we have to go to dinner with them or get drinks with them. But you have to learn to accept that there are people in society who just do not agree with you politically. And it's not an attack on you personally. A lot of the times, it's just a difference of opinion and being willing to sort of live with that. And then choose your battles. You know, who is it worth going to battle against? What ideas, what ideals are worth going to battle against to improve our society? But then when it came to Dr. Jordan Peterson, you know, he was telling this story about, I forget where he was, maybe Munich. And he was talking about how he went into one night and he was with his security. They just went into this cabaret because he saw the sign. He's like, this might be interesting. And, you know, he got in and it became clear there's probably some transgender individuals and he's been very outspoken about those issues. So he's thinking, oh, I'm probably going to be hated here or whatever. And, you know, he watched some of the shows and he was talking about how kind of miserable some of these people seemed. And I kind of wondered, well, where is he getting with his story that he's telling? He's telling a story about the cabaret and all the different acts and like a comedy act and a striptease and all this stuff. And one of the conclusions that he came to, and it has, I think, kind of informed how he talks about some of these issues, is, for instance, when you're talking about kids or even adults who are so confused about their gender identity that they're willing to get life-altering surgery or they want to seek life-altering surgery. He said one of the things he's come to realize is how truly, you know, tormented some of those people are, how truly depressed some of those people are, how, I mean, just if you can imagine that, the internal struggle going on with someone who is that confused about their gender identity or their sexual identity, and is taking, you know, active steps, physical, surgical steps to change who they are. And that is sort of how he tries to frame the conversation in his mind. And he also references that when, you know, you're talking about these people who, these deranged Twitter users who will use fake names and fake identities to attack him, to attack his family, to, you know, attack his livelihood. And he looks at those people as being just so deeply troubled and kind of sad. It's almost like a pity for those people. And that's a way I think that he allows it not to bother him. But when it comes to like transgender issues and stuff like that, I think that's his way of looking at some of those individuals and some of those young people and what they're going through and, you know, personalizing it to say, in some cases, like you have to understand, like these people are going through something that is tearing them apart inside. And I think if you can kind of keep that in mind, no matter what your views are on transgender issues, I think it can lead to more productive conversations. So anyway, and I'm gonna get to more of that in a second when I talk about this Matt Walsh segment. But I really just found, you know, Jordan Peterson, he's one of those people who you almost feel dumb in his presence because he is so, so intelligent. But it was just an honor to be able to sit across from him and have breakfast and this small group of people and be able to chat about things. So really, really cool experience. But I was bringing up this Matt Walsh segment, and I think a little bit of what Jordan Peterson said to me is going to, you know, come into play in my analysis of this. So Matt Walsh is, of course, a political commentator. He works for Daily Wire. He has a show, a podcast, and a lot of it centers around these gender issues. And transgender issues, LGBTQ youth issues, and sort of what we're, you know, what society is accepting of when it comes to kids, and, you know, vehemently opposed to gender reassignment surgery, et cetera, et cetera. But he had this commentary that even, you know, the right and the left are both criticizing him for. I won't say everybody, but a lot of people. And it was about someone named Dylan Mulvaney. And that name might sound familiar. So Dylan was born a boy, has transitioned into a woman, and has done these videos. You probably have seen some of them where it's like, day whatever as a girl, where Dylan is, you know, talking about this experience day to day of becoming quote unquote a girl. And then Dylan Mulvaney was invited to the White House to interview President Biden, is like this big influencer on TikTok and social media, ended up actually getting like surgery, not only, you know, like gender surgery, but also like facial reconstructive surgery to look more feminine. So anyway, Matt Walsh did this commentary talking about Dylan Mulvaney, and I'll play just a clip of it. I don't know how much I can get away with without, you know, it's a copyright issue, but I want to play just a clip of it and let you form an opinion before I give mine.
Dylan, if that is the most attractive you will ever look, then I don't even want to imagine what you'll look like when you're at your ugliest. You do not pass as a as an attractive woman or as a woman at all, even with 50 pounds of makeup and plastic surgery and clever lighting tricks. Even then, you still cannot escape what you really are and what you will always be. You have successfully shed whatever parts of you were masculine, perhaps, at least on the surface. Nobody would ever describe you as masculine or manly, so you've got that going. But your femininity quotient has not increased at a rate commensurate with the loss of your masculinity. You may not be masculine, but you also aren't feminine. Instead, you are weird and artificial. You are manufactured and lifeless. You are unearthly and eerie. You are like some kind of human deepfake. That's what you are.
So here's the thing. I tend to agree with the criticism of this, that it was just kind of mean. You know, it was just kind of cruel and unproductive, and lacked sort of a really coherent fact-based argument against some of the things that Dylan Mulvaney has now come to represent. I, you know, have no issue with Matt Walsh talking about why, you know, transgender surgery for youth is so dangerous and detrimental to their long-term health, et cetera. But, you know, that was all just sort of personal attacks and insults about Dylan Mulvaney, about Dylan's appearance. And it just was very mean-spirited. And I go back to kind of what Jordan Peterson said, and, you know, I'm trying to apply that logic of, you know, Dylan Mulvaney, regardless of how, you know, what you think about the choices that Dylan has made to identify as a woman, go through all these surgeries, and now actively be this influencer for young people in our country, I have to imagine that Dylan has had a really difficult life up to this point. Of, you know, this, I can't even imagine, you know, believing so much that you're trapped in a different body, that you're getting surgery on every part of your body to be something other than what you were born. And I think if you talk about it or talk about someone like Dylan in the way that Matt Walsh did, I don't see how that's winning an argument. I don't see how it's convincing people of your point of view. You know, anyone who agrees with what he did probably was already against transgender surgery for youth. I think if you're someone who's kind of in the middle of that issue, you see the sympathetic side of it, you're kind of not sure where you stand, I don't think that watching that Matt Walsh segment is going to change your mind or bring you to his side. And that's kind of the issue, is if you lose empathy, you lose everything. If you lose empathy, you lose the argument. And I see Matt Walsh in that video as someone who has lost his empathy on this issue, which is unfortunate because he's been effective in a lot of ways on this issue in messaging and bringing some of these issues to the public consciousness. But I think that you can talk about someone like Dylan Mulvaney, who has thrust themselves into the public sphere in a major way, has chosen to be a TikTok influencer, has chosen to be this sort of voice, I think you can be critical of Dylan Mulvaney. I think you can be critical of what Dylan Mulvaney might be teaching or influencing the next generation on. But I think you can do that without losing your empathy. I think you can have a fact-based argument, fact-based conversation without losing your empathy. If you want to turn Americans or win Americans onto your side of this issue and win the quote-unquote culture wars on this issue, a video like that, language like that, derogatory statements like that, just mean-spirited insults like that are not going to do it. They're simply not going to do it. And I'll also take issue with how Matt has responded to all this. And he's, you know, I'm not saying he needs to apologize or take the video down. It's his show. He can do what he wants. I just tend to disagree with the messaging on it. If your goal is to get fewer kids to have these life-altering surgeries, I just don't think it wins hearts and minds. But, you know, one of the things he said, in addition to like kind of being a little bit of an ass to conservatives or pundits on the right who disagree, this is one of the tweets he sent out. He said, "It still blows my mind that there are people literally castrating, butchering, and sterilizing children, and many others intentionally trying to lead kids to this fate. And yet some conservatives," he puts conservatives in quotes, "are concerned that I'm being too mean in the ways that I oppose this evil." So when I see that he puts conservatives in quotes, to me it's like he is questioning who you are if you disagree with them. Like, if you think that video was too harsh, then you're not a conservative. You're a conservative, in quotes. And to me, that's what the left does. That's the purity that the left demands. Saying, oh, well, you know, if you're not with us on all everything, if you're not 100% lockstep, then you're against us, and you're not one of us, and you're not a liberal. You're not a progressive. I mean, I get that all the time where people try to assign, try to tell me what I am. Tell me I'm right-wing or left-wing or conservative or liberal. And he's saying here basically, conservatives in quote, you're not a real conservative if you're concerned with or you're taking issue with my video. And again, that's just a tool of the left. So I would challenge him to certainly push back against the criticism, no big deal, but avoid using the strategies and the tactics of the left against people who probably agree with you on 95% of issues, but are just taking issue with the way that you attack Dylan Mulvaney in the video. There was a soundbite going around from President Joe Biden that I just could not believe. I saw some folks tweeting about the language in it. I was like, no way he said that. I mean, he says a lot of stuff, but no way he said this. So this was at a White House event, and he was talking about a reality of what used to happen in this country, the inexcusable, horrific, inhumane treatment of Black people in this country, which I don't agree with the notion that we have to forget that part of our history. I think it's very important that we remember that part of our history and that we see it with clarity. But I want you to listen to what he says at the end.
You know, folks, lynching is pure terror. Enforcing the lie that not everyone belongs in America and not everyone is created equal. Pure terror to systematically undermine hard-fought civil rights. Innocent men, women, children hung by a noose from trees. Bodies burned, drowned, castrated. Their crimes, trying to vote, trying to go to school, trying to own a business, trying to preach the gospel. False accusations of murder, arson, robbery. Lynch for simply being Black, nothing more. With white crowds, white families gathered to celebrate the spectacle, taking pictures of the bodies and mailing them as postcards. Hard to believe, but that's what was done. And some people still want to do that.
Some people still want to do that. Who are some people? Do I believe that there are still racists in this country? Absolutely. Do I believe there might be a handful of straight-up lunatic racists who are like, yeah, I wish we could hang someone from a tree and take pictures? Yeah, probably. But is it anywhere close to a faction of people that should be thrown out there as, oh, some people still want to do that, by the President of the United States? And the implications and the divisiveness and the danger of the President of the United States just saying, oh, yeah, some people still want to do that.
White crowds, white families gathered to celebrate the spectacle, taking pictures of the bodies and mailing them as postcards. Hard to believe, but that's what was done. And some people still want to do that.
Frankly, it really is disgusting. You want to talk about racism that still exists. You want to talk about, for instance, the racism on Asian Americans, other instances of racism that you see. Fine. I'm not saying you have to ignore that stuff. But to manufacture, I mean, who is he talking about? Have there been examples of someone who wrote like a manifesto or a group or something that's like, yeah, we want to string up people still and take pictures of it and send postcards to our loved ones and have parties around hanging? It's completely manufactured. And, you know, the president, you know, there are, of course, sick people in society. Murderers, rapists, pedophiles. People are being murdered every single day at record levels in our country. People are doing disgusting, inhumane, horrible things to one another right now. There are cases of it on the news. Now, they don't involve race, usually. They don't involve hangings from trees, but they are egregious. They are acts where people are dying, again, at record numbers. Why can't the president talk a little bit more about that? No, because he has to make everything about race, this like artificial race war in this country. And just throw out some, again, as the president of the United States, we still have people who want to do that. Making it sound like we're still like back in the Jim Crow slave era days where white people absolutely despise black people. And it's in such significant numbers that the president of the United States has to talk about it. That's divisive. That's creating a divide that doesn't exist in any meaningful way in this country anymore. It's almost as if there are certain politicians who want us to hate each other on the basis of race, who are actively pushing for that. I mean, I think about the story we discussed the other day. We had Jason Rance on, the Olympia School District, dividing kids, creating a safe space for kids, except white kids, safe space for kids of color. Convincing those kids that you need to be like protected from white kids, that it wouldn't be a safe space if there were white kids there. It's like they want us to hate each other. It's like they want us to go back to a time where we hate each other. I'm so disappointed in Joe Biden because, you know, he ran on this, I'm going to bring people together, I'm going to be a president for everyone. And then you look at his Twitter account and it's just mega Republicans this, mega, just this total false flag, a straw man. And then he says something like this.
White crowds, white families gathered to celebrate the spectacle, taking pictures of the bodies and mailing them as postcards. Hard to believe, but that's what was done. And some people still want to do that.
Some people still want to do that. It's a very convenient throwaway line for the president of the United States to try to incite hatred in this country, and truly shame on him. I think I was telling you guys how I'm going to Adele next week. Did I tell you guys that yet? I went through the whole like Hunger Games process of trying to get Adele tickets for her Vegas residency, and then she canceled it, and now it's finally been rescheduled. So next week is the big week. And Adele is someone who like lost a ton of weight over the last few years. And then she like, especially like right before the residency was announced, she like lost a ton of weight behind the scenes, just like said she wanted to get healthy again. And she is one of the people who inspired me to say like, I need to lose my COVID weight. And so I have been slowly, well, quickly, and now a little more slowly, but still working to lose all 42 pounds of my COVID weight. I've got about 10 left to go. And I will say this past weekend, I was at a lake house and I didn't follow the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan 100%. I'm going to make an acknowledgement. There was a little bit of Super Bowl snacks eaten that weren't necessarily on the plan. But the thing I like about it is you can just bounce right back in, you know, because you're keeping track of your progress. And so it's just not the end of the world if you have a few days here and there where you slip. I mean, I do my best not to have those days, but I didn't feel... like there have been other times where I tried certain weight loss techniques, cheated, and then I was like, no, off. Now I'm off the wagon and now there's no going back. The Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan is so structured where it's easy to go back. And easy not to, you know, you slip up one day, no big deal, and then you're back on track the next day. So that's one of the things I really like about it. I also like it that they don't have to go into an office setting or go get weighed every day or every week or every month. You can do it totally virtually from anywhere that you are. No prepackaged meals, so you're just cooking food at home. You can always find something out to eat that's going to work on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan, and the results are nearly instantaneous. I lost the bulk of my weight in the first month. And then, of course, the more weight you lose, the weight loss slows down a little bit. There'll be some ebbs and flows, but I'm still heading in the right direction, and that's all that matters. And so join me and other Undivided subscribers and listeners who have embarked on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan. You can schedule a free consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan, who's great. You'll love him. Go to eastsideweightlossclinic.com and get that 15-minute consultation on the books today. You guys, we had a win this week. We had a win this week, and it feels so good. Sometimes you don't get everything you want, but we have to celebrate little wins, especially in a state like Washington, where there's one party rule. If you are not part of that party, sometimes I'm sure you feel a little bit left out. We've been preaching this sort of be your own best watchdog. And for the last couple months, I've been begging you guys to send emails, make phone calls on certain bills and priorities. And one of the big ones that we've been talking about is the pursuit bill. And in Washington state, after the whole thing in 2020, around this racial reckoning, they pushed through a bunch of police reforms. One of them basically limited almost entirely when police can pursue suspects. So now you got thousands of people just driving off from police, going on to do God knows what, and huge issues with it. So there were two bipartisan proposals to fix the broken police pursuit policy. They stalled. And then at the last minute this week, a Democratic chair of the House Public Safety Committee proposed a substitute bill that was a little bit watered down from the bipartisan bill, but would give more power back to the police to pursue suspects in the most egregious cases. So violent crimes, domestic violence, assault, cases where you have an escape from custody. Vehicular assault. So that means like if they back into a police cruiser to get away or something, or another person's vehicle to get away, or when they're fleeing, they hit another vehicle. Well, they've just committed a vehicular assault. And so then you can pursue that person. I think there were a couple other instances, but those are the big takeaways. So that's good. Is it going to fix everything? No. For instance, it wouldn't allow police to pursue a suspect simply if they're driving a stolen vehicle, which vehicle thefts here are at a 15-year high. And so I think there's still a lot of law and order issues that are going to be at play, even if this substitute bill, this kind of compromise bill, ends up getting passed and signed into law. But what I, you know, was saying is you have to celebrate wins. And so I went down to Olympia for this hearing, the Public Safety Committee hearing, just because I wanted to be there to see, like, are they going to pass this or not? And I was shocked all but one Democrat voted to pass it, including Representative Tara Simmons. So she's of note because she is a formerly incarcerated person. She's a convicted felon. A lot of her laws are, I mean, they're ones we've talked about on the podcast. Remember on the podcast last year, we talked about that crazy law that would have reduced the punishment for drive-by shooters who kill someone? That was her bill. So I was just gobsmacked that she voted in favor of reforming the 2021 police pursuit law to pass it out of committee. But I want you to listen to what she said when she took that vote.
I am voting for this today, and it's probably one of the hardest votes that I've taken as a lawmaker so far because the law enforcement community is divided on this issue. I think, you know, I talked to the Fraternal Order of Police yesterday, and they said they really prefer the work group. But WASPIC and WACOPS wants, you know, a fix right away. The data is in dispute. And we also have concerns from my district around, you know, police telling the community that they can't do their job. And, you know, I represent a district, and even though I might personally not want to vote for this policy, I think my community wants me to, so it's really hard. But I am encouraged that there's a 2-year sunset, thanks to Representative Fossey, and that I hope we pass the work group as well so we can bring everyone together to get the actual policy right, because I don't think that this is the best policy, and I think we can get there if we work together. So I think this is a harm reduction move, and I just wanted to make sure everyone knows why I'm voting for it.
So she recognizes, based on the number of her constituents who reached out to her, that she might not support this policy, but it's important to the people she serves. Now, I don't want to assume, but I imagine a lot of you reached out to her as well. And so I just want you to know that these things make a difference. I never would have imagined that Tara Simmons would support fixing the pursuit law. Yet here we are. And so that is a win in and of itself. And I hope that it shows you the power of making your voice heard, sending emails, making phone calls. There's a reason I beg you guys to do that stuff, because it really matters. And when you have lawmakers who are willing to take that to heart, I don't think all of them are, but obviously Tara Simmons is, and go against her own personal opinion on something for the good of the people she serves, I think that's noteworthy. I think it's worthy of praise, and I think it's worthy of praising all of you for taking the initiative to let lawmakers know what your priorities are. It's Friday. That means time for our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Joining us from the bowels of Florida is my sister Miranda. I don't know. Bowels, sure. I guess the bowels might be more like North Florida.
I don't know. Wouldn't that be like the stomach?
I'm just saying it's a little dumpier there.
Yeah, you're right. It's pretty nice down here. So this wouldn't be the bowels.
Like Orlando's like the armpit of Florida.
It is. I mean, I like Orlando because Disney's pretty magical, but the rest of Orlando is pretty.
Well, you know who doesn't think Disney is magical? Ron DeSantis. Speaking of Ron DeSantis, he's taking some interesting steps when it comes to social media and schools.
Yeah, he's taking a lot of steps when it comes to schools in general, but he is bringing back the fight for his digital bill of rights, he calls it. He said on Wednesday at a press conference that he's making another run at reining in social media platforms by pushing the lawmakers in the state to approve his digital bill of rights. TikTok is among one of the new ones that he's really trying to ban access in schools and from government funded Wi-Fi devices, et cetera. In addition to it probably just being a complete waste of time for kids in schools, it's also something that he kind of hints at being a way for China to spy on us because it is a Chinese-based app. So he's trying to get a little control over that when it comes to government access.
Yeah, well, the whole TikTok issue is interesting in and of itself for the China tie, obviously. And I think that's a pretty bipartisan concern about having, you know, millions and millions of Americans deep in this device where China is just collecting all their information. But yeah. I really don't have a problem with this, particularly in schools. And I want to say, I mean, I know there are a lot of private employers that will block certain sites from their servers or Wi-Fi or whatever. And if it's a government computer, you shouldn't be on social media unless it's a function of your job, obviously. Like you're a social media liaison for a government entity, then you'd have to have some way to deal with that. But yeah, kids shouldn't be on TikTok at school anyway.
No, they probably shouldn't be on any of those social media networks at school anyway, unless it's, like you said, something very specifically towards or in you need to use these outlets for this kind of education that they might be doing. But as far as I know, I only waste time on these platforms. So I can't imagine kids are doing anything but that too. So I have nothing against a digital bill of rights. I think that, you know, government doesn't keep up with the, you know, technology as it is. So it is nice to just know that, you know, our governor is kind of just keeping it in the forefront of the conversation and making sure that people are dealing with, you know, new technology and new social media platforms as they come out and making sure that people are not wasting their time on it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious. I need to look more into this. I don't know why it's called a bill of rights when it's talk about when you don't have a right to use TikTok. So I'll have to go look at what else the governor includes in that. But it's interesting. And yeah, I have no issue with that in schools whatsoever. Now, if he tried to block it for all citizens in Florida, then we would have some conversations, Ron.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, speaking again of schools and what he's been up to, there was a successful effort in Florida to ban certain books from schools, which, yeah. You know, I know we could have a whole conversation about whether, you know, the government should be doing that on the left or the right. But there are some organizations now that have come into Florida to try to sort of fill that gap where the books were banned from school, but you can get them elsewhere.
I actually kind of came across this article just, you know, perusing the internet for different reading material. It's out of Teen Vogue, and it talks about how there are different organizations, one of them being, you know, the Dreamers in Florida. They're basically working with different publishers, authors directly, and just different book companies to help provide access outside of schools to some of these books that are being banned in schools. And I did find a list of the books. It's like 170 some books that have already been asked to be removed from shelves. Most of them are extremely very specific towards gender or race. It's a lot of kids' books. I saw Handmaid's Tale was on there, which I thought was a little weird. And a couple of poetry books, but yeah, so, you know, this whole thing doesn't take them out of public libraries either. So you're still able to go to public libraries and rent these books or find them through these different organizations that are creating access for books, which I think is great because, you know, if you can't get them in schools, I mean, that's one argument, but like you said, if he's not taking it away from everywhere, then like you can continue your education out of schools. It doesn't have to stop, you know, begin and end there. So I don't know. It's one of those things, like you said, we could argue this in and out and upside down because there's so much gray area, but you are still able to access these books. So,
yeah, I mean, and I agree with this too, because yeah, if you choose, it's a different thing if you're making the choice to go and actively seek out a book. But if your child's at school and, you know, there's a book in a library they might stumble across or whatever it is, hold on, I got to sneeze. Wait for it. I'm not even going to edit that out. That's in the show now. You know, if your kid stumbles across, and I think that's the concern of some parents, it's like, I don't want this like book about gender or sexual identity to be in my child's library. I don't see a problem with that. And it's like you said, it's not like you're pulling those books out of every single private store, et cetera, in the state and burning it in the streets. So yeah, no issue. If you're a parent, that's my whole thing. Like if you're a parent, let your kids read what you're willing to let them read, but make that decision as a parent in private, not like thrust it on a school.
Absolutely.
Let's end with a fun one, as we always must. There is a hot new pool at someone's house in Florida.
Yeah, it's, you know, I mean, one thing about Florida is just about everybody has a pool. And I guess people get a little bit sick of your generic shapes of ovals and kidney bean shapes and rectangles. So one family in Odessa, Florida has a revolver shaped pool, and it's kind of awesome. But and I don't think it gets more Florida than this, but yeah, the pool's been there for a few years, but it's just starting to make its way into the Florida man territory because I guess somebody tossed a drone up and took a picture of it, and here we are.
I mean, super interesting. I want to know how that conversation went with the pool planner. But also, when they go to sell the house, either that's going to like be a total selling feature or it's going to be problematic. And I'm not sure which.
Yeah, I think people, if they see that on the MLS, they're either going to want to go buy the house or they're not going to go at all. And the article that I am referencing this from actually does talk about the conversation with the pool company. And it's the people who own this pool are actually pool company owners. So yeah, and they made the, you know, they wanted a pool they could do laps in, so you can do your you know, exercise laps down the barrel of the gun and back, and then you can hang out where the trigger is, and it's pretty cool little gun. You can maybe share a picture. Yeah.
If you had money where you could build a pool in the shape of anything, what shape would it be?
I think it'd be cool to do like a star shape, like maybe an 8-pointed star or something. That way, like you can have these like different little like areas to hang out at different depths. Maybe one can be like almost beach-like and one can be super deep. And then maybe one can have like a cold plunge. And then it'd also look really cool from above. But probably the logistics of walking around that pool would probably be horrible. So there's probably reasons why that doesn't exist. What about you?
I don't know that it'd be a particular shape, but I'd want a lazy river.
Oh, a snake-shaped pool.
A snake-shaped pool, rubber band-shaped, because Mike really loves whenever we go to Vegas, we stay at the MGM, which I pushed back at first because I'm a little bougie and I like, you know, some place at the spa, etc. He likes it there because of the lazy river, and he's basically a grown child. But then the first year we went, after I had kind of bitched and moaned about it, I was like, oh my God, that was so fun.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we grew up, you know, going down an actual river on tubes for fun. So I'm assuming that when you're an adult and you get to go to Vegas and party and do the same thing, it's probably pretty fun.
Yeah, it is. So gun-shaped pool, rubber band-shaped pool, whatever. All right, Miranda, we appreciate it.
Have a good weekend.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Okay, let's end with comments about Jordan Peterson, who, again, is in town to do some of this lecture series where he's touring around the country. I posted a picture on Facebook about us having breakfast, and I just wanted to, and about this idea of courage. Like I said, one of the things I've taken from Jordan Peterson's, you know, previous comments is that it is a reminder to me of why I'm doing this, of trying to set up my life in a way where I can afford to speak the truth. You know, when I was in corporate media, I couldn't afford to speak the truth, because if I said some of the things I say now, you know, if I pushed back too hard against the governor's vaccine mandates, would I have lost my job? Could I afford to lose my job? And now I work for you guys. And, you know, I feel like I can't be canceled. Certainly you guys can cancel subscriptions. I hope you don't, but certainly you can. But I think I'm set up in a way where I'll be fine. You know, I've said things about Trump before that people haven't liked and lost like 100 subscribers in a day over it, which is a lot for me. And so, you know, I made this post. I said, it was a privilege to have breakfast with Dr. Jordan Peterson today and talk about courage. As he knows well, it can take courage to speak the truth, but even greater courage to be unbothered by societal consequences for doing so. Let's see what some of you said. Lee said, I am such an admirer of his and his teachings, keeping you in my prayers for your continued bravery to speak out and stand for the truth. Dan actually said he went to Jordan Peterson's show last night, said, good as expected. There were activists outside. They didn't have anything, any meaningful response when I confronted him. And called him a trans activist with denying the objective existence of non-trans women. Let's see. Karen said, thank you, Brandi Cruz, for your bravery, and I will pray for your safety and your commitment to continue no matter what you are offered. And there will be offers if you're exposing truth. You will be offered an enticing amount to stop doing so. I don't know about that, but maybe. Mike said, I really appreciate his wisdom on so many matters, like a modern day philosopher. Let's see. Terry, so very cool you got that opportunity. Keep showing courage as you go forth in truth. No fear. Kelly said of Jordan Peterson, love him, a truly intelligent and wise man. You cannot deny that man is intelligent as hell. He's very wise. And I think that anyone, even if they disagree with aspects of his politics or his lectures, can learn something from him. And maybe, you know, by listening to him, it further cements your own beliefs that are different from his. But I think that if you remain in an echo chamber, you know, remain in this safe space, in this little ballooned space, not only can you not learn anything new, but I don't think it tests your beliefs in a way that opens you up to new ideas. All right, thank you so much for listening to the Undivided Podcast. Thank you for following me on this journey of mine to set my life up in a way where I can afford to tell the truth. I hope you all have a wonderful weekend. Thank you again, specifically and especially to Undivided subscribers for helping in this movement. And I will see all of you on Monday. If you're not an Undivided subscriber already and you would like to join the mission and the movement, you can do so in two ways, patreon.com/undivided, or you can become a contributor on my Locals community, brandycruz.locals.com.